Welcome to How Fitting, the podcast for slow fashion designers and entrepreneurs about creating clothing and growing a business that fits your customer lifestyle and values. I'm your host, Allison Haynes. Has listening to How Fitting helped you create a better fit in your fashion business? Episode 100 of this podcast is coming up, and I'm planning a special episode featuring the most notable moments from the 104 guests I've had on this podcast so far, plus your story. Head over to howfittingpodcast.com and tell me about your favorite How Fitting episode and how it has impacted you or your business. Submit your answers or send me a voice note by August 1st, 2024 to be included in the episode. The link is in the show notes. Today, I'm joined by Madison Powers of Madison Victoria. So welcome to the show, Madison.
Thank you so much, Allison. I'm happy to be here.
Excited to get to know you and hear your story. For those listening who are just meeting you for the first time, could you share a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yes. So I am the founder and designer of Madison Victoria. We are a slow-based, sustainable fashion brand based out of North Carolina, Charlotte, North Carolina. And we make designs for the effortless creative, the woman who gets dressed with effortless ease, and the woman who appreciates feminine, classic, and creative silhouettes.
I love it. Yeah, and there's so much I want to ask you about with all that. But let's kind of start. I'd love for you to share a little bit more about like what this effortless creativity means and how you weave that into your brand.
Yeah, so effortless creativity is really just achieving a look, a style, or just creativity effortlessly. You're doing it with admirable ease. And one thing in the fashion industry that can be a little bit frustrating is that in order to be seen as a true creative, quote unquote, you have to come up with these astronomical designs. Mm-hmm. And that's not the case. You know, I want something that I can go to the grocery store, and I want something that I can go to a family function, and I want something that is versatile. Mm-hmm. And that's where I birthed the effortless creative, because that's how I view myself. No matter what I do, no matter what I wear, I will always put a small or slight creative spin on things, whether it's with pattern or color or accessories. It's just the little things that kind of build up to that creative piece that really makes a difference in the outfit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can definitely see that in your designs where they are like very timeless overall, but then
yeah,
they have that like unique twist where you're like, oh, I've never seen that on like a basic button up before. It's like you can still wear it in the traditional ways you'd wear that piece, but then it doesn't look like just the type of piece that you could get everywhere else and is
exactly
kind of like the classic. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why I birthed Madison Victoria too. And I intertwine the effortless creative customer persona into that because it's so much of what it is. Like Madison Victoria is a true creative spin on classic garments. It's a spin on your classic button up, your baby doll dress, like things that are, I mean, they're timeless. They've been created and made since the dawn of time, but it's kind of like, what's that creative thing that's missing? Is it a color? Is it a color hue? Is it a fabrication? Is it, you know, a certain stitch here to make it flow differently there? And it kind of just is really about the little things. Like I said before, it just really makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. So is this kind of effortless creative style and kind of the brand then built on that, is that very much a reflection of kind of your own taste in clothes and fashion, or like, yeah, what's kind of the difference between you and the brand and how much are they overlapping?
Yeah, so it's so funny. The brand is a reflection of me, but yet it isn't. I think the brand Madison Victoria is a little bit more feminine than I am. And it's so funny because I get questions and feedback from my customers on social media, and they're like, "I'm not this feminine, but I love this garment. Like, how do I style it?" And I'm like, please do not fear. Like, I am not this feminine either. My style is truly a mix of feminine and masculine. I will take a beautiful pastel pink top and pair it with a navy strong cargo pant. Like, it's just a mix and match for me. But I think that I myself truly view myself as an effortless creative person. Just because, I am very functional. I'm traditional in a way, but in the same sense, not. And I say I'm not traditional just because I will put that non-traditional piece or spin on my outfit. Like I said before, whether it's in pattern or accessories, I'm going to add something that will make it comfortable for me. And I think that's where creativity comes from too, is making it your own. I feel like a lot of the times people think creativity just means you have to do so much that is not true to you. I mean, you can be creative with all monotone colors. You can be creative with all neutrals. It really is just up to you. And that's where the community of Madison Victoria comes in. It's for people who are traditional, who are functional, but also yearn for creative spaces and creative communities. And that's really who I am. That's always what I've yearned for too. Growing up, I've always been in either fashion spaces that were really avant-garde or fashion spaces that were really minimalistic and didn't take risk. And I always felt like I was in the middle. And I was just like, how do I go about building this community? Because I know there's other people out there that are a mix of both. So yeah, that's kind of where it's kind of how Madison Victoria reflects myself.
Yeah, it really sounds like you blended kind of all pieces of that together in this brand. And I mean, I think that's what makes it special is because it's not the either or. It's kind of like, oh, I don't quite know where to put it, but that makes it cool. So you mentioned a little bit about kind of your background or that you were in spaces that were either avant-garde or very kind of traditional. What is your background? Do you have a background in the fashion industry, or kind of where did all this start?
So I started doing fashion illustration when I was in high school. And I just did it just to have a creative outlet for myself. And then I started to take it seriously. And my mom was like, okay, you're getting really good at this. Like, what do you need? Like, what do you need to take this seriously? And I was like, okay, let me get back to you. So I went on YouTube and I found a bunch of fashion illustrators that actually did that for a living. And they had the Copic markers, they had the watercolor pencils, they had the super fine pens to make their, flats out of. And I was like, I need all of this. And then that Christmas, she actually got me a book. It's called The Fashionpedia from Fashionary.
Yeah, I love
And
that book.
if I love like literally everything about it, if you want to be a fashionpreneur, that is truly the visual encyclopedia for all things fashion. And it really helped me so much to go into the design of things. I got to learn about what things were called. Like, this isn't just a regular pant. It's called a trouser. This is a balloon sleeve. This is a true wide leg pant, and so on and so on. And then I also got to learn about technical flats. So before when I was fashion illustrating, I was doing it with like models, and the models would have like the clothes on. But then after I got my Fashionpedia, I would draw technical flats. And that really helped me be able to piece things together and figure out how things piece together, meaning what type of stitching do they need? What type of zipper fly does this trouser need? And that's really what kickstarted my, scene into fashion design. And then when I went to college, I actually was going to go to college for fashion merchandising. But as we all know, that is such a small pool. And I was like, I don't know if I can take that risk. So I decided to go to school for business administration. I had a concentration in marketing and entrepreneurship. And that was a huge pool. I mean, you can do anything with a business degree. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to school for this. How can I kind of scratch that itch of wanting to be in a fashion space? So I was really good at marketing. I took a few business marketing classes in high school. I did some brand marketing, some event planning, and then I did some retail management for local boutiques in the Raleigh-Durham area. And that is how I kind of got on that local woman-owned fashion business scene. And it was great. It was wonderful. But one thing I did realize is that a lot of local businesses sell the same thing. And that means that they're purchasing from the same wholesaler. And the wholesalers, I mean, they're wholesale. They're not sustainable. They're kind of just there to produce whatever you need, however much quantity you need. And depending on that fashion business, depending on how known they were in that area, they would either jack their prices up or lower their prices that would make it affordable. And that's not sustainable. So I found myself still yearning for that contemporary luxury space. And I was like, well, I mean, there has to be something here. Like, there has to be something in the Raleigh-Durham area. So I have the pleasure of working for one of the best contemporary boutiques in the Carolinas, Baron Vogue, located in downtown Durham. They carry slow, sustainable fashion designers from Rachel Comey to Tibby to Laura Manoogan. And that's where I learned that there are designers out there that really care about what they make and how they make it. And they don't mind explaining the concept behind their collection, which was really, really, really important for me as a person who didn't have a mentor in the fashion industry to be able to learn and gain so much knowledge from designers that actually cared about what they were producing. So that's kind of how I got started.
Yeah, it's quite the journey. So I'm curious, like, what about, like, you seem to be very into fashion in high school, like even into the technical side of fashion with, drawing your flats and all of that. What about, like, you mentioned the like learning how to do the flats really kind of changed the way you looked at the clothes and like constructed the clothes. Can you talk about that a little more? Like what changed when you kind of learned more about maybe the technical side and how has that helped you in your business?
So when I learned about what makes a garment, because that's essentially what the technical side is, I really was able to figure out what resulted in what. So, like, if I did a certain stitch this way, like a half stitch, a partial stitch, a French stitch, this would result in the pant looking this way. And that really helped me figure out what type of silhouettes I wanted to produce for my brand, just reflecting on what fit me very well and what I felt really spoke to a true feminine and classic silhouette. There are always certain garments that kind of fit in a certain group. So, like when you think of classic garments, you think of your basic trench, you think of trousers. When you think of feminine silhouettes, you may think of a baby doll dress. You may think of the cute little black dress. You may think of, a balloon sleeve, a certain type of pleat. And that is how I kind of structured or I put together what I wanted to design because I wanted it to reflect, a certain grouping. Like I wanted it to reflect that classic feminine and creative grouping.
Another thing I found interesting when you were sharing about kind of how you got into this was the learning about kind of the concept behind those certain designer collections and how that really helped you and almost like mentored you in the industry. Were you actually speaking with the designers and like hearing firsthand from them, or how were you kind of hearing about the concept and maybe a little bit more behind the scenes of their business?
Yeah, so that was a great thing about Vera & Vogue. They would host yearly trunk shows, or I would say honestly bi-quarterly trunk shows, and that was where the designer of the product we were carrying in store would come in, and they would have an appointment with our clients, and they would style them. They would kind of have like a lunch and learn or a TED talk and kind of talk through their concept and their why of their brand. And I mean, the concepts were so, I mean, they were amazing. They went into so much detail, from the colors they used to the fabrications to the origin of the fabrications and just the whole concept that they explained. It was so inspiring, and it opened up so many doors that I didn't even know were there. Like, I mean, Google is an amazing thing. You can learn so much about Thailand or Paris and their Parisian lifestyle without even going there. And that's kind of what they taught me. Like, a lot of these small designers don't have money to travel because they are putting so much funding into their business. And that's where they kind of take time to do their own personal research. And that's something that it was kind of disheartening a little bit, because I knew that I didn't have the funds to travel to Paris, to travel to London, to travel to New York, to travel to the fashion capitals of the United States. And it was just a little disheartening. But to hear that you can do research and still produce great things and great concepts from different origins and traditions, and not be there. And that was something that was a game changer for me. I really took my research seriously, and I really took the time to figure out what traditions, what concepts, what origin stories really resonated with me and who I wanted to be as a designer, which is really important, because you can't just, I mean, you have to pick what resonates for you, and with you. So, yeah, that was really a game changer for me.
Yeah, that's really cool and very kind of relevant takeaway of learning how to research and how to kind of expand your world without having a
Yeah,
huge budget to be able to travel the world all the
exactly.
time. Yeah, and I think that so many designers can relate to that of there's kind of the glamorous side of fashion that everybody thinks, where like the designer's off in Paris, going to the Chanel,
Yeah.
shows and trend inspiration on the streets and stuff. It's like, but often it is very, designers have a lot to do and
Yeah.
don't get the luxury of kind of just soaking in inspiration all day, every day.
Yeah. And I mean, that research aspect is so important too, even down to if you decide to go the manufacturing route. I do my own personal patterns, and I send it off to my team that I have. But like, finding manufacturers, like, the research is crucial. There are so many sweatshops everywhere, from Paris to London to overseas. Like, I mean, it's a lot, and you really have to be careful, especially if you do want to be a sustainable fashion brand. You have to back it up. Like, you have to have the receipts, you have to have the proof that your team and your practices are sustainable, and that takes a lot of research and time and effort.
It
Yeah.
definitely does.
Yeah.
So, what does sustainability mean to you? I mean, there's so many angles that brands can kind of approach and bring sustainable practices into their business. What does that look like for you and your brand?
Yeah, sustainability really means that, well, and like you said, it definitely does mean a lot to different people. But for me, it is how you're developing your product. Is your team getting paid well? Are they in a sweatshop? Are they being fed? Are they being fairly treated? Are the materials being sourced organic? Even down to the actual production, like, are they being produced in thousands and hundreds? Because, I mean, sadly, the more you produce, I mean, the more work and effort it's going to take. And sometimes in certain countries, the work and the effort doesn't add up to the pay and the treatment. So that's where my research really came into play for myself. And it was really important to make sure that I was able to Zoom call with the teams that I was interviewing with and, you know, seeing how many sewing machines they had out and how many people they had working at their corporation, other businesses, brands, and designers they've worked with, and really just how they source their things. There are some corporations that do source at local sweatshops. Like they will pick excess fabric that another sweatshop wasn't able to use and use that. And I mean, it's polyester and it has so many dyes and so many things that are not fit for the human body. And, you know, that can really deteriorate your skin over time. So really just the team, the treatment, and how everything is sourced and produced is what the sustainability factor means for me. We are a on-demand brand, meaning I will only make a certain amount of a certain product. And then depending on how it is received in the community, I will recut those fabrics or recut those designs and, you know, make another order. But we typically do not go over 30 pieces of one garment.
Okay. Yeah, that's good to know. So like you're doing very small batches to like gauge the demand. And then if there's enough demand, then you cut kind of another really small batch of the piece.
Exactly. Yeah.
So how did you actually, like, what does your production look like? You mentioned that you have a team, but what kind of pieces are you doing yourself? And what pieces are you working with another company or a, you know, team to produce?
Like I said, I do not have a traditional background in fashion or design. So it was so funny because when I first did my first collection, so I do the patterns and I do the measurements. I create a technical pack to send my team. And my team is located in Asia. I have a team of five. I have a seamstress, a fabric sourcer, a tailor, a seamstress, and I think she's just like the overall manager to make sure everything goes swell, but a team of five. And I send them my technical flat along with my rough, very rough pattern sketches and patterns that I've cut from like really raw fabric. And then they kind of piece everything together. And going back to what I was saying earlier is I had no idea what I was doing. The measurements, I originally set them like, and that's why it's so important to do your research and to make sure that you have a connection with your manufacturing team, because they really could have just produced whatever I gave them and it could have been an absolute catastrophe, but they didn't do that. And they actually corrected my errors and my flaws that I had, which I was so grateful for and continue to be grateful for. So yeah, that's kind of what my production looks like. I do the patterns and the measurements. That really, the measurements is what takes the longest, because, you know, that's the most important thing that your seamstress and the people making your garment need. And it's really, it's always a learning experience, because depending on the garment you choose, there's so many moving parts to a blouse, to a trouser, to a dress, especially if you add different patterns and stitches. Just can be a lot, but it's a learning experience that I'm grateful for.
So it sounds like you have really great kind of communication and back and forth, like on the same page about what you want for the style, and they can then recommend like, hey, are you sure you want this, or would you really, you know, do this instead?
Yeah,
that's amazing. I feel like that's a great relationship to have with your manufacturing team and your factory. Are there certain things that you, when you were looking for this team, that you were asking about to make sure they had that type of communicative feedback? Or were there any strategic things that you do to make sure that there is kind of that back and forth for the best product possible?
Yeah, so typically manufacturers, especially small team manufacturers, they will put who they work with on their website. And I always go and look at the brands they've worked with to see how big they are, to see if they are fast fashion, to see if they, are run by one or have they have a committee or a board of trustees. And I definitely look at that and I take time to comb through it to see if they would really be open to, being that communicative with me, because I knew I needed that going into this. I knew that I didn't know everything. I knew I didn't come from that fashion background, and I don't have a partner. So I was like, I need a team that will really want to work with me. And with the team that I found, I did see that they work with a lot of small designers, which was so heartwarming because I was like, okay, this means that they know how this will go. They know that mistakes will happen and they don't mind. And then I also had the chance to connect with a couple other small designers that worked with the manufacturers that I was looking at. And some of them had great feedback and some of them did not. And I definitely took that into account. And, I just kind of went with my non-negotiables and what I really needed. And I just kind of looked at the reviews or the feedback that I got. And I was like, is communication a problem here? And some of the manufacturers that I was looking at, it was. They were like, I mean, it took them 2 weeks to respond. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that would be awful for me, like with me being by myself. And then the manufacturing team that I have now, they had a lot of great reviews. I think the only thing was production time and lead time. But I mean, as a designer, you learn how to work around that. But communication was a part of everyone's feedback. They had great communication. So I would say definitely look at the reviews, contact who they worked with if you can, once you find a manufacturer that you want to work with. And then also, like during that first interview, and depending on what background they come from, they may not be used to or comfortable with meeting you over a Zoom call or over a phone call, but that was really big for me just to see what their corporation looked like in person. I wanted to hear the background of the tailors and the seamstress and just the overall company, like when they were founded and who they're founded by, stuff like that. So, definitely don't be afraid to ask those questions because I met with a couple manufacturers over Zoom and they were so great on paper. They were so great on email. But once I seen over Zoom, I seen everything for myself. I was like, okay, this is not the team for me. And that's okay. But then, I met with the manufacturing team that I have now and I fell in love with them. So,
Oh, great. Yeah,
yeah.
it's often such a little bit of a bumpy road to find the factory or manufacturing partner that really is the best fit for how you like to work, your communication style, and kind of the values and yeah, even the product type of your brand. And so it's
Yeah,
so great that you were able to
exactly.
find a place that you really have that good rapport with, that you can make these products together.
Yeah, agreed. And I mean, like I said, if you are grateful enough to have a partner, to have someone you want to go in business with, I think all of that can be a little bit easier. And sometimes you can, communication, as long as they respond in a timely manner, that could be just enough for you. But for me, I definitely needed someone who would not be afraid to give me feedback and suggestions. And the one thing I love about my manufacturing team is that they took the time to learn my brand, to learn why I created my brand, the aesthetic of my brand, the community I'm trying to build around my brand, so that their suggestions weren't just based on what they thought, and they actually were looking at what was best for my customer. And that was really, really helpful down the road.
Yeah, I love that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So it seems like you were really kind of smart going into starting this brand and your first collection about what you wanted and what kind of your goals and what you were looking for. What were some of those first steps you took to start your business that kind of set you on that kind of clear path of what you wanted?
So I watch a lot of fashion courses on YouTube, and I also took a lot of fashion courses via LinkedIn or just things I seen on social media that I could partake in. And there's so many, I mean, there's steps. Like there are steps to building a fashion brand, but there aren't steps to building your fashion brand, if that makes sense. So like everyone needs, your operations, your logistics, your financing, your production, like those are just general things. But when it comes to how you want to build your fashion brand, meaning, you understand your concept, you understand why you made this brand and how you need to operate it to reflect that why, that is where it becomes a little bit of a gray area that it takes designers forever to figure out and to find. It's like an everlasting journey. But I would say I definitely looked at videos. I took fashion courses and what the basic steps were. So like, what does that production step look like? What does that logistics steps look like? What fashion operations do I need? And then once I did that, I developed a really, really, really detailed business plan. It's like 20 pages long.
Oh, wow.
It's not, I mean, I still refer to it now just to make sure I am still tracking to reach my goals and, the accomplishments I set for my business. But really, I feel like everyone needs a business plan, and this could be the business, major in me talking, but I think a business plan is definitely needed to outline everything from your concept to your customer persona to your design projects to your brand marketing. That is huge. Your brand marketing is a huge part that honestly will change as you evolve. So you need to have a place where you can go to and, kind of remember, like, wow, okay, this is where I started, but I want to change this. I want to change that. And having a place where all of that is stored is so beneficial to like your production, having your production team, like, your manufacturer's info in your business plan to know, if you want to get a new one or if you want to, edit different things, you just have that stored there. And then even down to like your story, like your background, like just having to remember where you came from, like have a place to remember where you started from. And that's why I feel like a business plan is so important to have everything that made you want to start in one place. And also like that outline of the things you need. Because, I mean, like you said, before you own a fashion business, you think it's so glamorous and so creative. It is not. It is not
Very
like.
scrappy.
Exactly. And like creativeness is maybe like, I don't know, 15% of it. Like it is a lot of business. I actually have to find time to be creative. And like just having your creative, I don't know, ideas and inspirations in a document kind of just helps you remember, where you were going with this when it starts to get a little too businessy, at least for myself.
Yeah, those are all great tips. Do you find that having that really detailed business plan helps you make decisions kind of going forward?
Yes, it does. Especially when you're like, I mean, because every business goes through their ups and downs. And when you're in your down moment, you're just like, what can I do? And sometimes things come up and you're offered different things with different brands or, another person, and you're just like, I just want to do this because we're just so down right now. I don't know what else to do. But then you go back and you look at your business plan and you read what your mission was. You read who your customer is. You read why you created this, and it kind of helps you realign yourself to remember, like, although I am down right now, this that's being offered to me is not my brand. It doesn't align with who I am or who my brand is. So, it just kind of gives that woo-saw moment for me. And then also, like, it helps you remember your projections. When you first make your business plan, your accomplishments, your goals, whatever you want to call it, they will be literally all over the place until you actually streamline some of your operations and you make, you have those steps laid out that will actually help you meet that goal. But it just is a little time capsule in a way, and I refer to it every now and then when I do need to make business decisions when it comes to collaborations or partnerships, and even my next collections. Like, I mean, you can go different places with your collections, meaning I could do something, super feminine like I did with my most recent collection and do something super dark and gloomy. But although that is maybe what I was feeling at that time, looking back at my business plan, that's not who my business is. Like, that's not who I am or who I'm projecting to be. That may be a little bit of a radical explanation or example, but it just helps streamline everything.
Yeah, no, it totally makes sense where you're having this concrete place where, and I think especially not having a large team or like a partner who is making these decisions with you. I
Exactly.
know as the one per, you know, a sole person in my business, sometimes you get stuck in your own head, and it's nice to be able to look back and be like, okay, me of, you know, me who's not in this current situation, me who was like sitting down strategically thinking what I want long term, decided this, and I could be like, oh yeah, that was a great choice. Like I should go with
Exactly.
that when you're like stuck in the current situation and maybe can't see that quite as clearly.
Yeah. Exactly.
So what is your why? Why did you start this business?
So I started Madison Victoria for the effortless creative, for that woman who was not avant-garde, but who was not super minimalistic. And I also started it because I myself, as a Black woman, I have been so blessed to be in luxury, creative, and contemporary spaces. And I felt left out. I was never fully comfortable. And I realized that that's something that the Carolinas kind of lack. I mean, and honestly, that's a problem within the whole fashion industry. Diversity has never been at the top of their, execution list. So, I really wanted to fix that. And then also, I know coming from an HBCU, coming from, me living in North Carolina all my life, I did not have the resources or the network to be able to go to New York and have that full-time fashion job after I graduated. And I want to make a safe space for Black women in the fashion industry. And I want to make a safe space in a community for creative women, for creative feminine and classic women, women who really enjoy the traditional side of fashion, but they just have something about them that's like, I have to put this creative spin on this. I have to make this my own. Because I think that's something that with now, there's just so many trends out there. It's hard to make things your own. And I mean, there's still people out there that do it. I mean, my clients, my customers, they send me pictures all the time, and I'm like, you did this with that? Like, this looks amazing. And it's just so heartwarming every time I see it because it's like, this is what it's about, like making Madison Victoria your own. I want a community of women who want to make the clothes their own, And I eventually want to make a community full of fashion opportunities for local girls and local college grads that want to get into the fashion industry that don't have that connection or that network. And that's speaking for long term as well. But that's really, really why I created this. And that's my driver to keep going is my customers, the community I'm building, and just the opportunities that I'll be able to present for people who want to get into the fashion industry once graduating college.
It seems like it's like such a comprehensive, why I love it kind of touches at all these different levels of why the clothes are what they are, but also like why your business is what it is and like why you're doing this. And yeah, you've really thought through this, and I love the different kind of levels, and it's like layers of an onion the deeper you go about the why you're doing what you're doing.
And I mean, it's something that I have been through myself. Like everything that I just discussed, I mean, I've been in all of that. Like I have been the girl, I've been the college grad that didn't have any, strong fashion connections. I've been, the creative that didn't really know where she fit in, the fashion industry. I've been that girl that just didn't know where to go or what resources to use. Like I've been lost before, so I don't want anyone to feel that way. And I know that, that just comes with maturing and going through life. But if I can alleviate that with my brand, that is the ultimate achievement for me and Madison Victoria.
So wonderful.
Thank
So,
you.
yeah. So, I'm curious in your degree in business and marketing. So, you said you have been that fashion girl that didn't know where your place in the industry was or didn't have those connections. And it's like you didn't even go into fashion because of maybe some of those same things. But I bet this degree in business and marketing has prepared you in many ways to start your own brand. What are some of those ways that really you've seen the benefits of kind of your degree in this business? Because as you said, there's a lot of business in fashion business and less of the creative time.
So I am so thankful that I went to school for business because it set me up. It set me up for success. It really did. So in when you go to college for business, you learn accounting and finance, you learn marketing, and then you learn kind of the entrepreneurial side. And that I would say those are the three biggest things, because you have to know your finances. You have to know your profit margins. You have to know your goals for yourself financially, or you will not be able to sustain. It's just, that's just what it is. And then marketing, I mean, businesses thrive off of marketing. Like that's what a business is. If you do not know how to market yourself, if you do not have any type of brand marketing, you will not make it. And that's
Absolutely.
something that my college really, really taught me. The importance of marketing and the importance of knowing your customer persona, like having customer persona profiles, because if you don't know your customer, or you don't take the time to learn your customer, or even make your customer, if you're a new fashion brand, you will try to make things for literally everyone. And that will be so mind-boggling, so exhausting, so uninspiring. You will want to quit within like your first 6 months. So it's really important to be able to sit down and figure out what your customer persona is, to figure out who you need to market to, because that's the first step of marketing. And
I
then,
100% agree with that.
yeah.
For yeah, it's like you can't design everything for everyone, or it's very difficult to.
Yeah.
But when you know who your customer is, it gives you kind of that narrows down your decisions and makes it easier to really make choices that will result in the best possible designs for that specific customer base.
Exactly. And I think a lot of brands miss that at first. And it, I mean, it's a hard, I mean, it's not a hard thing. It's an easy thing to miss. Just because you, especially if you start designing based off of things you feel like you're missing in your closet, you're not looking at a customer, you're looking at yourself. So it's easy to miss. But yeah, that's really one of the most important things. And then the entrepreneurial side, it really taught me how to pitch myself how to be confident in what I'm creating and my business practices. Learning how to pitch yourself. If you know how to pitch yourself and pitch your brand, you can get yourself, I mean, you can get yourself way further than if you just had money. Like if you have a whole bunch of capital, you have a whole bunch of funding, and you don't know how to pitch yourself, you will be stuck in a really stationary spot for a really long time. So I really learned how to come up with a good pitch, the structure of a good pitch, and who to pitch to, because not everyone deserves to know your story or to know, you know, why you're doing what you're doing. So that was really beneficial for me to understand too, and to also kind of give you that steadfast faith that this is what I'm going to do. I know it's going to be hard, but this is what it is. Like, this is what I'm passionate about, and I'm going to die behind it.
Yeah, those are really, really great points there. Is there perhaps a time that you could share a story about a time where you've pitched somebody, like where knowing how to pitch has gotten your brand ahead of where you, you know, maybe just money alone could have?
Yes. So partnerships. I am so thankful to say I have a lot of partnerships coming up, and
exciting.
You know, yes, very exciting. And that is something that money can't get you. You know, if someone doesn't resonate with your brand, and if you're not able to speak to why your brand matters and also how it's valuable to another person, then, I mean, you know, like I said, you'll stay in that stationary place. And that's where me learning how to pitch myself really helped, because I was able to speak to all of those things. I was able to speak to what my brand means, what my customer persona is, how it'll be beneficial to that other person's brand or personal image. And that's gotten me a lot of the partnerships that I have today. And then also like building your network. A lot of people want to be associated with things of meaning, or things that have meaning, and learning how to speak to that by also selling yourself and selling your brand. That is like, that's a true gem that everyone should want to develop. Takes a while because it takes, you know, it takes confidence. It's really scary going out by yourself, especially, like I said, if you don't have a partner, you're doing this alone, you know, and luckily I'm never alone. I have my Lord and Savior, but it takes a lot of grit and dedication.
Yeah, that I think pitching and really, you know, being able to make those connections and build the reputation, because even if you have a great pitch, if the person you're pitching to doesn't see the, like, if you haven't built trust with them, it doesn't matter how good your pitch is. If they're like, I don't buy it, then it's not gonna result in the actual collaboration. So you've obviously put in the work not only to build up that very underrated skill of being able to put together that pitch and show the value of what your brand is offering to the other person and the connection and how it'll, you know, benefit both sides.
Yeah.
But you've built that trust with your community as well.
Yeah. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because building trust is, like you said, I mean, that comes before the pitch. And I think that's where having your socials and your website and all of your marketing collateral really add up, or, you know, result in your overall mission. Because I've came across a couple brands that, you know, their mission didn't match, you know, their social media, and it was just really confusing. And I think that's where brand marketing comes back again. Like, it's so important to make sure that your brand is marketing your mission, your why, your morals. And I think that's why, you know, brands are initially open to, you know, hearing my pitch and wanting to meet with me.
Yeah. So it seems like storytelling and kind of the art of crafting the story, even knowing what story you want to share and who you want to share that with, are kind of a big part of how you're running your business and just your approach to things. Is that, would you say that's correct?
Yes, for sure. Storytelling is actually something I learned when I was working at Baron Vogue. I had the pleasure of working side by side with the co-founder, Nadira. She's actually a Parisian, she's from Paris, and the store
Nice.
manager there. She had been in retail management for a very long time, and they really taught me the importance of storytelling because when you think of storytelling, you think of the why, you think of the image that you're creating for that customer about that specific designer. And then also when it comes to styling, I have a bunch of my customers ask me for style advice all the time. And then I also do styling on the side for like my full-time job. And I mean, storytelling is, I mean, like that's the creme de la creme of everything. It's how you sell, it's how you connect with people, it's how, you bring meaning to something. And I'm thankful that I got to learn all of that while working at Baron Vogue too.
Yeah, it's I think that's another underrated skill that you've obviously spent a lot of time practicing and learning and putting into practice with your brand. So it's amazing. So is Madison Victoria your full-time thing, or did I hear you say you have kind of another job outside of this as well?
So Madison Victoria is still my side hustle, my little side baby, but she still gets full-time attention, which, is what every business owner says. But yes, I do have a full-time job. I am a full-time stylist, and I mean, honestly, it's been a roller coaster trying to find a job that doesn't suck the cre like the creativity out of me during the day, during my 40-hour week. And that is something that people really don't talk about. Like your full-time job really does have a lot to do with how you or how much you put into your business. And I'm happy to say I finally found that sweet spot. That kind of gets my creative, I mean, like styling and working in retail, it gets my creative juices going for what I want to develop for my brand. And also being around so many contemporary designers and so many smart and powerful and creative women, it really just inspires me to do more for my brand. And, it's just a beautiful thing to finally be at and feel because I have not felt that way before. So,
I mean, you spend so many, we all spend so many hours a week on at our job that if it is kind of soul sucking, it can kind of drain the energy out of you for everything else. And so it is,
exactly.
so critical to find that job that can sustain you financially, but also creatively, and leave room for your other, side business or hobbies or just the rest of life outside of that 9 to 5.
Exactly. And I mean, and what I found too is so I went from working at a contemporary boutique that carried, 50 to 60 designers, and then I worked for a fashion brand. And when I tell you, it is completely two different experiences. Like when you work for a fashion boutique that has different designers, there is limitless creativity there. There's limitless creativity. There's limitless storytelling. There's not a limit on anything, actually, from styling to merchandising to selling. Versus when you work for a fashion brand, I mean, and this is how it should be. I mean, the owners, the founders have really taken a lot of time to build their fashion company and their fashion brand to be a certain way. So it has to stick to that certain way. And sometimes that could limit a lot of things. And then especially if you're not in that creative, space or that creative job per se, or job titles more specifically, it's really operation and numbers based. And as a creative, I mean, that sucks the life out of you, quite literally.
Yeah, it's like you want to be creative, but you're sitting at a spreadsheet of numbers.
Yeah, exactly. And it was just, I found it so exhausting. And, I would have suggestions here and there, and it would always be, I mean, it would be received, but, subconsciously it would be shot down. So it was kind of like, yeah, thank you for this. We'll take this. And then they never do anything with it. And it's just kind of like, let me just go back to my numbers. And a lot of people think like, okay, you're doing numbers at your full-time job, but you have your business for your creative space. But what you don't know is, like we said before, it's like 90% business. So I'm still doing numbers when I get home from my job. And it just becomes exhausting. So I definitely think that is a discussion that we need to have more of, is that like finding, before you get to that point where your business is your full-time job, what is the perfect full-time job for a creative business owner?
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I think that's so relatable to so many people who are in that kind of can't go full time with their business yet, but still trying to navigate how to balance it all in the creative energy and everything. So,
Yeah.
thank you for sharing.
Yeah, of course.
So, what does success look like for your business long term?
Success looks like giving back. Giving back is one of my biggest things that I want to do more of when I have more. And not to say when you have less, you can't give more, but the way that I want to give back to my community. Going back to what we were discussing earlier, I want to have opportunities for those girls coming out of college, for those girls in college that need internships and experiences to put on their resume, and really just creating in-person communities. I think that's something that really, it's really hard to do when you have an online business versus when you have a brick and mortar store. It's hard to find spaces that aren't, charging $500 an hour to actually build that community in. I love, markets and trunk shows and stuff like that, but it costs money to do those things, and it takes a lot of energy. And sometimes I want to just have a event or experience that's just around or surrounded by community and not just selling. And I think that's a very thin line too, because I mean, you can sell and still build community, but at the end of the day, as a business owner, it's like, okay, you've put X amount of money into this event, so you need X amount of money to break even. And subconsciously, like, that's just eating away at your mind during the event, that I found for myself at least. And it's something that I'm working on, because you do want to just focus on the experience, because you're finally in person. Like I said, it's hard for an e-com based brand to do things like that. But long term, I just want to have events and places and spaces that really are surrounded around community. And creativity, from styling to career to, just different creative spaces that, we as women fulfill in this world. So yeah, I would say that's my long term.
I'm excited to continue following you and seeing this come to fruition.
Oh, thank you. I know, I'm excited too. We're actually doing our first market in Raleigh
Oh, cool.
Next month. So I'm excited for that. It'll be kind of a 180 moment, because I think maybe it was 2 years ago, I was at the same fashion fest that I'm going to be marketing at in May. And I was interviewing other business owners. I used to have like a fashion blog, and I would interview different women business owners about like why they started their brand and how long it took them to start, and just different fun questions that help the customer get to know them and their brand. And it's just so fun to see you're actually sitting in the place that you were interviewing someone else at. So very exciting.
Yeah, that's so exciting. Yeah, congrats on that.
Thank you.
So I have one more question that I ask everyone at the end of the interview, and I feel like you kind of answered it, but if you could communicate one value to the world through the clothes you make, what would it be?
That's a really good question. You said if I could communicate one value to the world.
Through the clothes you design. Or in your case, what story do you want to tell with the clothes you design? It's maybe another way to put it.
I would say feminine creativity is always on the back burner. And I think it's something that we need to see more of. I just love how women do things. Like, we are so strong, we're so caring, we're so creative, but we're also delicate in ways. And that's exactly what I want my brand to reflect. I want my brand to, I want it to see people in different lights. Like, I want it to see women in a different light. Like, my silhouettes are feminine, but they're also classic and they're also creative. And that's exactly what a woman is. And that's exactly the values of a woman. And, I think that's just something that I want to portray. I think that's a value that I want people to see in my brand going forward.
Nice. I love it. Well, this has been just such a great conversation on Madison. It's been so fun. Where can people find out more about you and follow Madison Victoria online?
Yeah, so our social media, that is where you'll be the first to know about everything, is my Instagram handle. It's going to be Madison E.T. Victoria. And then, of course, subscribing to our newsletter, that is where you'll get any details on upcoming sales, trunk shows, markets, events we may have. And yeah, I would say those two things.
Well, I'll put links to those in the show notes so people can find them easily. This has been really great to hear your story and all just like the amazing tips that you've shared for other business owners as well about your experience and journey. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Yes, thank you so much, Allison, for giving me this platform to be able to speak to me and my brand. You're doing great work out here, and I thank you so much.
Oh, thanks. That's all for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. And if you would like more episodes and resources like this about growing a fashion business that fits your customer lifestyle and values, sent right to your inbox, you can sign up for the How Fitting newsletter at howfittingpatterns.com/newsletter or at the link in the show notes. Again, thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again for the next episode of How Fitting.